You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
I thought our puck management in the second period was terrible. You know we, they were going to press. We played too much one-on-one hockey. And every time we played one-on-one hockey or we, you know, you turn it over around the top of the circle, you're basically breaking them out. And, you know, we did that. We did that probably four or five times in the second period. That really hurt us. And then I think at the end of the night, we just weren't strong enough around our net. Look at some of the goals. You got to be stronger than that.
No need to let it linger. The Sabres are right back at it in Columbus tonight, which is the good news. Marty, Lindy Ruff said earlier this year, you're not going to win scoring just one goal. Well, they have joined a four-team club now that did not win when scoring five. Can you name the other three teams that have lost, none of them in regulation, I might add, all of them in overtime, when scoring five or more?
LA is easy because they lost 8-7.
Recency bias.
Recency bias right there. I'm going to say Windy Florida Panthers?
Nope.
No, they didn't get there. No, I don't know the other two.
The Rangers, 6-5 overtime loss to Utah.
Yeah, and I thought it was 5-4, so I'm like, they didn't get there, but it was 6-5, you're right.
And the stunning Vancouver 6-5 loss to Calgary on opening night when they rallied late to tie, only to lose in an overtime. So it happens. It's early in the year, and it's already happened four times, the team. So that's quite a bit, I think. Like, it just, so the moral of the story is, whether you score one or five, there's still much more
part
to the game that you have to control. And may I call to the witness stand, Martin Byron, Mr. Byron, this is your one and only opportunity before this court. Would you like to retract your statement about Evgeny Malkin not playing well?
No, I know. Seriously, you made me look bad and Crosby, but I guess I should know that because whenever I'm involved in a game with Malkin and Crosby, they perform. I wasn't even involved in
even
the game
as an
yesterday.
Analyst. Yes.
But
look
I'm
at
not
you.
Even working last night. It's a TNT game and they still played, you know, their, you know what, off. If it hadn't been for those two, that game's over. Like, listen.
For sure.
There's no way. Like Carlson, that was awful. Letang was not good. Nobody was good. I get Puljujärvi gets a goal.
The Eller line I thought was fine again, as it had been against Montreal.
Yep, exactly. Yep, they were good tonight, the game before. So, but I mean, Crosby, Malkin, Crosby, it was them putting their team on their back. And I did like the start of the Sabres because my Instagram pregame basically said, the weakness of the Pittsburgh Penguins is their defense. Get to their defense and get there often and work them down low. I know the Sabres are a bit more of a rush team. They've always been. And Lindy Ruff's going to try to change that a little bit. Talked to Shayna Goldman about that last week, about how teams have not gone away from their identity of being good on the rush, like Colorado or Tampa or Florida. But it's add an aspect of, you know what? If you're going to play a team that has a tough time on the back end, put pressure on them. So off the opening faceoff, put pressure on the D. Boom, turnover by Jarry, you score. Put pressure on Carlson after that. It was a weird play off the wall by Zucker, but Greenway gets there. Boom, it's 2-0. You're like, hey, you're putting pressure. You're putting pressure on the D at creating a 2-on-1 for Peterka goal. Okay, so why are you playing high in the zone, in the offensive zone, and turning the puck over? And I get Lindy Ruff said a few things, and we just heard him saying puck management, right, and being tough in front of your net. Isn't that what last year and 2 years ago was all about, like the puck management and the lack of standing your ground in front of your own goalie? That was all about. And now I think it came very angry in Lindy's voice, in my opinion, in the way that he addressed that. He didn't want to single anybody out. But he was probably about a feather in his lap away from singling people out when he commented last night. That's what it was about. That was a tough a tough way to go in the second period. And we can all watch the game. We can all go to the highlights. And we all know that, you know, the power play turnover by Cousins and Quinn after that that made it 3-2 and 3-3 or 3-3 are two of the moments that Lindy's referring to. You don't have to be, you know, a Nobel Prize winner in hockey to know that. It's right there and you can see it.
How long is that list?
Nobel Prize winner?
In hockey, yes.
Of hockey?
Have we had any?
Not so long. I think most of them, I would say, are the ones that get voted into the Hall of Fame as...
Builders?
The reporters and the writing contribution. Those are the ones that could win that.
The Foster Hewitt and Elmer Ferguson.
Foster Hewitt and Elmer, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Those would be the one I'd vote for.
Well, Malkin has 11 points over the last four, has 11 in five for the season. He's leading the NHL in scoring. I thought it was a terribly rude tribute by Crosby to Michael Mersch by scoring from his knee for the overtime winner. So, you know, no need for Sid to acknowledge Michael's retirement.
Sid did it before Mersch, but Mersch.
I know.
Here, I get that.
It was all too familiar, wasn't it? Like that's, and I'd be curious to know how you think, knowing that Crosby has done this over and over and over to the tune of 1,600 points plus now, how do you defend in the 4-on-3 so that Crosby is not in that position to be the difference maker? And like, because people are going to casually ask that, but there has to be a technical component to this when you're playing 4-on-3 that makes it way more challenging than what it might appear.
Two things is your three guys have to not allow any low play. If they want to go back to the top of the zone, go back to the top of the zone. But I believe it was Clifton who was on the right side as a defenseman. And when he knows that the passing lane to the back door it could be there for Crosby, you have to put a knee down, stick down. Like, okay, go back up top, right, Carlson? Like, we're not going to give you that pass to Crosby on the back door. And at the end of the night, it may not have looked like it, but according to Money Puck, according to Sports Logic, the expected goals were around 6 for Pittsburgh and around 2.5 to 3 for Buffalo. So you think of Luukkonen giving up 6 goals in the game and you're thinking, well, you know what? Like, you got to get better goaltending. And I get it. There's moments where I would probably suggest the same things. But when you give up an expected goals that's a 6 number, you didn't do a lot of defending in front of them. And so that's part of it. Now, is it on Clifton? No. I mean, that's a good pass, but you just got to be a step ahead. Like, you got to play chess, not checkers. You got to know that, hey, I'm not going to give Crosby or Malkin anything down low. Go back to Letang. We'll take that at the top of the zone, but we're not going to give anything down low.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's pick your poison because historically you will find that both Letang and Crosby, and obviously the other two components on the ice, have had pronounced impacts in overtime over the course of their careers. So was it a penalty on Thompson? Yes. In my opinion, it was a penalty. I think Tage acknowledged it too, although he is right in saying that it happens pretty much once a shift every time. And it does, because most board battles involve a little bit of contact where obviously as an aggressor, you're trying to prevent an opponent from doing something, but just like in other sports, you don't call it every single time, and it's way more wide open when it's 4-on-3. But the only thing that annoyed me, which I told you before the show, was 1:50 left in the game, Penguins dump it into the Sabres zone, Zucker goes to play it out, and he gets tripped on the Malkin entry right in front of the ref, and I'm just like, these are very similar plays here. So anyway, that's
it. Yeah, and I get that. And it was
Tage would finish his statement last night by saying, we did it to ourselves. So agreed. Let them agree on that and let them try to make it a 3-game point streak with a good performance in Columbus tonight.
Well, yeah, but before we get to Columbus, the part of the game that bugged me last night, okay, and I get the Sabres allowed Pittsburgh to come back. We've talked about the power play, and the Sabres are now still 0-for. They take a penalty on their power play. They give up a shorthanded goal. Like, those are part of the game that bugged me. But in the middle of the second period, right? Peterka chance on a breakaway goes off the post. You're like, hey, that could have been a 4-1 game right there. You get a power play. So, you know, you you end up on the power play, then Zucker takes the penalty, then Grizzlick gets called on Tuck for, it wasn't a penalty, like it's Grizzlick 4-on-4 stepping up on Tuck, making a body check. Tuck never saw Grizzlick was there, and, you know, goes down, they call it tripping. So you're 4-on-3. You've already kind of shot yourself in the foot by taking a penalty on the power play, but you got a gift of, hey, you know what? We're going to give you a 4-on-3 here. Mm-hmm. And then you go and give that shorthanded goal, which was the Cousins turnover. The Sabres challenge for offside. And first look, I thought it was offside.
Agreed. When it was happening live, I was like, oh, that was offside.
That was offside. Like, why wouldn't you drag your foot, right? Like,
exactly.
I mean, 2-on-1. Just for that, I would have called it offside. Like, seriously, do better. But that's that. Then the challenge, the call comes back that the goal stands. Now, the NHL, and offer, we are lucky to get the NHL's emails when there's a rule, stated that the call was inconclusive. Basically, not that the play was onside or right, that we have confirmation that it was. The call was inconclusive because I believe when TNT, the last frame, when they stopped the puck on the blue line before it fully crossed, like it was really close to see, right, like, is the skate on and over the blue line or not. So they called it inconclusive. Look, I don't mind them challenging there. I don't mind them. You know what? It made it 3-2. O'Connor scores. Like, okay, it made it 3-2. You're still in control of the game. And then you allow Puljujarvi to score his breakaway goal because of another turnover. That was the game right there. In a matter of 4 minutes, I felt like the game went from you're in control up 3-1 to now you're 3-3 and scrambling.
But, you know, it settled in after that. Eventually they fell behind, but then immediately roared back with 2 goals in 40 seconds in the third period, which I think it's fair to say was unexpected at that point based on how the game had been trending against them.
Yep.
And so good for them. It's just, in the end, so many non-5-on-5 situations were not good for Buffalo last night. They allowed 2 power play goals, a shorthanded goal, and a 6-on-5 goal at the end, which I think when Lindy Ruff said, we didn't handle the pressure well, and we were passive inside of our zone, I think at the end of the game, the 6-on-5, I get it. Well, first of all, that is the pressure situation. So that's you can't get more pressure than time running out, their best players out there, figure it out. But that sequence lasted almost 2 minutes without a whistle.
Yeah.
Buffalo very rarely came close to possessing the puck with authority and certainly not within their own zone. Were they aggressive enough to get it into an actual 50-50 battle? And that allowed for the eventual move around. And I mean, look,
but it's the same thing.
I don't even know how
you make little mistakes, right? You make little mistakes as sometimes you're too passive. Sometimes you're too aggressive. I would always kind of venture on the aggressive side of it. And the first goal of the game for Pittsburgh was Tuck was very aggressive in the neutral zone, almost got a 2-on-1 just to get it stripped by Crosby, who's really good at it. And then they come back and they score. I'm like, somebody, because I mentioned how I like Tuck's game in the first period on X, somebody says, yeah, but he lost the puck on the first Pittsburgh goal. I'm like, yeah, but he lost it being too aggressive. I'll take the too aggressive nature as opposed to the passive nature. That's one of the things. Just like the Pittsburgh Penguins dumped the puck in at 5-4 at the end of the game, and it was going to be an icing, and Luukkonen goes out to play the puck. Am I going to blame Luukkonen for playing the puck and negating the icing? No, he made a call, an aggressive call of saying, you know what, the way that I can help, not knowing it was going to be icing because Carlson was close to the red line and he has to go out right away. But he stopped the puck and gave it to his defenseman and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the passive happened. Not Luukkonen going out to play the puck, which you make mistakes, but I can tell you this. Everybody's got to help each other out. You make a call on the play. But there was no like, oh, we're going to, if we have to ice it, we'll ice it. If we have to, like, I was going to text our group, empty netters are for winners, because I'm like, they're going for an empty net. But there was never a chance, never a time that they were aggressive enough to say, hey, they were able to get the puck back and we're going to score an empty net.
So what did you think of the tying goal then, that Malkin has the shot, the heavy shot, and then the rebound just lay in the crease?
Well, I mean, I know Lindy mentioned we got to be tougher around our net, and I get that. And maybe on that play, you're singling it Owen Power, because Power is with Raquel. But I think if Power grabs Raquel and throws him down on the ice, Brian Rust is right there to put the puck in the net. I think you got to have help. And one of the things that after the two games in Europe, Lindy Ruff says, I'm still evaluating this team. Right now, the penalty kill has given up 5 goals on 18 power play attempts, right? So you're at 72%. Who are your penalty killers? Who are your guys that you can say, hey, you know what? We are going to go out there and defend and be hard to play against when we kill penalties? I don't think he's figured that out yet. I don't think anybody has stepped up and say, hey, I want to be that guy. I want to be that guy. It's 5-4-18 on the power play against the Sabres. And 6-on-5, I know you had Greenway, McLeod, Zucker out there with Dahlin and Power, but that didn't show me that this is the group that should go out there and close out games. Right. It didn't. Not in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so I'm having a hard time right now trying to say, does Lindy have those guys right now at his availability, or does he have to try something else, right? Benson killing a penalty. I think he's trying Zach Benson killing a penalty. I don't know that Benson should be in that role, or he hasn't shown me that, hey, he's going to be a successful penalty killer. So there's a lot of question marks still yet to be answered. I trust that Lindy will find some answers, but right now those are the moments where do you have the horses to get that done on the PK or in situations late in games?
Well, they have to, and you're right. They maybe just haven't found it yet. So someone in that roster right now, many, as a matter of fact, will be counted on to be better in penalty kill and closeout situations here. And it just hasn't happened yet. It's the annoyance of last night. And again, like, you have to understand, and I mean, how many weeks are into the season? Are we a couple weeks? Like, literally, like, you're tired of hearing us talk about 2-goal leads that disappear. Just accept it. It's going to happen. I was thrilled that they scored twice in 40 seconds in the third period. This game had, was it hallmarks, earmarks? I can't remember. Of like what, of years gone by. Right. And when you've watched enough hockey, you sense a familiarity, especially with Pittsburgh and the numbers that Malkin and Crosby have posted against not only Buffalo, but everybody in the course of their careers. So I was pleasantly surprised by that impressive 2-40, snap it right back in your favor with a great opportunity, because I still thought if they had just a little bit more of that aggression, handled pressure, whatever, in the final 2 minutes, they could have easily escaped that with a win in Pittsburgh. Look, this is a Pittsburgh team that got blown out in their first game of the season on home ice, had a good road trip, came home, still got a terrible performance from Tristan Jarry, basically gets jeered off the ice, and the Sabres found themselves in a position to win this thing late, and they didn't. It's frustrating to me because at the end of last night, the standings should have read Buffalo 2-3, Pittsburgh 2-3. Yep. Instead, it's Buffalo 1-3-1, and the Penguins are now above 500. And I get it. We're 5 games in.
Yeah.
But you got to win these. Like, you know what I mean? So it's neither here nor there.
Okay, so, but again, it goes back to, you mentioned the 2 goals in 40 seconds. How simple and how aggressive were those two plays? Like, the puck is in your defensive zone. You're not looking to make a D-to-D pass. You're not looking to turn it behind the net. It's a hard play off the wall. It goes off of Pittsburgh Penguins player, and Peterka is chasing it down. Like, JJ had a fantastic game. Yes. I thought it took him a while. Look, he scored, make it 3-1. That was a great play by Byram to him. But he was fantastic, and that is going to be a huge help for the Sabres. But the approach of puck management is not just inside the offensive zone. It's how you play in the defensive zone. And if I'm Lindy Ruff today and I'm showing video, I'm like, I'm going to shoot it as hard as I can. And whatever happens is going to happen because it's not going to be in my defensive zone. The puck's not going to stay here. Not going to feather a little pass here. Not going to touch play there. There's moments for that, but know the situation of the game, and I'm not going to just make an easy play. And there was many other situations where it wasn't turnovers inside the offensive zone blue line. It was soft plays around the ice that I think hard plays were made, and hard plays gave you results.
Mm-hmm. Lindy won't be speaking to the media today until close to 5 p.m. Obviously, Sabres pregame coverage at 6:30 tonight. Remind me to make a special announcement about the pregame later, like I teased yesterday, and we're still teasing it. Anyway, so we won't know lineup changes officially until then.
Yeah.
These are really tough situations, I think, for a coach early in a year when you've got extra bodies and you're trying to be fair to players who are trying to work their way back up to top level. You're trying to be fair to the guys that are playing well and show that, you know, I'm going to do my best to give you the best players to work with in this situation. Mm-hmm. But when you have kind of the number of players, and again, it's five games, that haven't hit their stride yet, I think it makes it very challenging for a coach to pick one or pick two. Because remember, I kept quizzing you on this in those first two games in Prague. Like, if the coaching staff is going to make changes here, do you think they're going to tweak the defense pairs or do you think they're going to tweak the forward lines, right? Like, I kept pushing you on that, in which area. And there's no easy answer to this. The easiest answer is obvious. Devin Levi is going to presumably start tonight because that's the plan, right?
That's a given.
But beyond that, it is challenging, you know? Like, Peterka, obviously, just keep going with Thompson and Tuck and hope that, and I think this goes back to what you were saying about the expected goals for from the different analytics providers last night. The Sabres are still getting rush chances and one-off chances, but boy, it would be great to see Peterka, Thompson, Tuck just have those 45-second dominant shifts, right? Where you almost automatically draw a penalty. They only had the one power play last night, you know?
Well, technically, another thing. They should have had two.
Right.
Let me explain. Pittsburgh takes a penalty. The Sabres, a little bit later, take a penalty. So it's 4-on-4. Pittsburgh takes another penalty. Mm-hmm. But because the Sabres missed on the challenge, that second Pittsburgh penalty never had any power play time assessed to that penalty. It was still on the first one. So despite the fact that they got two different power play, 5-on-4 and a 4-on-3, it was technically still on the first Pittsburgh power play penalty. So that's why, I'm counting it as 0-for-2 because you had two different opportunities to score and you didn't do it. You asked me yesterday, what do you think? You know, Pittsburgh on Wednesday, Columbus on Thursday. You know, Yuri Kulik did not play last night.
Right.
Because we weren't sure. Benson was available. Peterka was available. And we had the conversation. Well, who comes out? And I said, you know what? I could see maybe Kulik playing on the fourth line with Krebs and Malenstein and not have Lafferty in because Lafferty didn't play the game before. Mm-hmm. You know, but I can also see Lindy making some changes in Columbus, regardless of the Pittsburgh result, because you've had guys that have either underperformed or guys that have had to deal with some injuries. So we talked about it yesterday. I said, So if Yuri Kulik doesn't play in Pittsburgh, I think he plays in Columbus. I mean, we'll see tonight when the lineups all come out. But
yeah,
that is a lot of coaches do that now. They look at the back-to-back situation and they want to insert fresh legs on the second game. Like, one pair of legs is probably not going to have that much of an effect on things, but they want to do that.
The Cousins line, obviously, is going to be garnering the most attention right now as one that could have potential change, right? Because of the lack of results. And it's unfortunate because it was probably the line that people were most excited about, in the sense of bounce back for Dylan. He's mature enough. He has his role on this team. It's very clear. And he's going to have guys like Benson, a healthy Quinn, Kulik, you know, like that line, I think for a lot of people was like, as long as this line is humming, you know, it's going to provide that proper transition of balance, transition of offensive power, if you will, because clearly the bottom six, although this is another frustration of last night, when you get multiple goals from the bottom six, you best win the game.
Yeah.
Right? And it didn't happen. So
that, and that line, McLeod, Greenway, and Zucker were on the ice for a lot of the chances that Pittsburgh were able to create. And I mentioned Mike Sullivan was my assistant coach when I was with the Rangers. And when we played the Pittsburgh Penguins of Bylsma, he used to always hate the fact that he's like, Pittsburgh, they do it. Like, they'll send Crosby and Malkin against your third and fourth line all the time to get back in the game. Well, Mike Sullivan, the coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins now, does the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. It's probably not a coach's thing. It's probably a Crosby and Malkin thing saying, hey, coach, get us back out there against the third and fourth line, and we're going to create and get ourselves back into momentum. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the Crosby and Malkin on the ice against the McLeod line created a ton of chances. But you're right. You get a McLeod goal and a Greenway goal, you're hoping to win that game.
Yes. Well, put a much greater emphasis on tonight's game, which is in Columbus, coming up with Jordan LaBarber from Sabres.com. And we really want you to join us on October 26th. It's a 1 p.m. game for Hockey Halloween. Wear your spookiest costume. Marty's already prepping for this. Yes. Celebrate Halloween with the Sabres. The Wings are in town. First 5,000 fans will receive a wearable goat head themed flag. And there will be a trick-or-treat trail available for the first 1,000 fans in attendance in the concourse. Do we get early access to that?
Like happy trails?
As part of
like,
our pregame?
Like I want to do the trail.
Actually, it would be great if they sent us on a trail and we all ended up in various parts of the arena, perhaps locked in, unable to even do the pregame show
that
day.
On a quest would be great. Isn't, pardon the interruption, they do happy trails at the end of the show? Like, I feel like that's what this is. This is happy trail trick or treat.
Okay, visit Sabres.com/tickets today. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
You gotta take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.